It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Greg Gutfeld.
I'm Martha McCallum.
I'm Brett Baer, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Friday, November 11th, 2022. I'm Jared Halpern. Republicans will need to meet expectations with a newfound majority in the House.
There will be a big push from within the party that if they don't get some of this stuff done, there are going to be some people who want their money back.
I'm Chris Foster. Psychedelic drugs are helping some veterans deal with personal demons after war.
The turnaround was so fast, and it changed my perspective. It really felt like I had lifted all this weight that I was carrying on my shoulders. You know, I was kind of excited to just live again.
And I'm Andy Puzder. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
As election week comes to a close, it's natural to ask, now what? President Biden answered that question this week.
Regardless of what the final tally in these elections show, and there's still some counting going on, I'm prepared to work with my Republican colleagues. The American people have made clear, I think, that they expect Republicans to be prepared to work with me as well.
The president says he is not changing course, arguing benefits of his legislative agenda, like the infrastructure bill and the Inflation Reduction Act, won't be fully felt for months. House Republican Whip Steve Scalise, who is likely to be elevated to majority leader, says the GOP does have a mandate from voters, pledging his support for current GOP leader Kevin McCarthy to take the speaker's gavel.
We're going to have our elections next week. I'm supporting Kevin McCarthy for speaker, and he'll win that race. And ultimately, you've seen us pull together these last few months and focus on the attack against big government socialism. People in very different places of America said they don't want big government socialism, and they're going to give us the House to be that check and balance. And we're going to go to work for those hardworking families.
The challenge now becomes governing in a divided government with a Republican majority in the House that is on track to be smaller than many in the party had predicted, at least publicly.
I think the expectations, you got to manage those.
Shannon Bream is the host of Fox News Sunday and Fox News chief legal affairs correspondent.
There was not a lot of managing of expectations. There was talk of a red tsunami and of a red wave. And even though the polling, we kept trying to caution people, the polling was within the margin of error, especially over on the Senate side in so many of these races, that we knew there was really, like, absent a working crystal ball, you just couldn't know what was going to happen. And we saw real indications that these were going to be knockdown, drag out fights on the Senate side. I think the House, though, is surprising to a lot of folks on both sides of the aisle and certainly to the pollsters out there. But I think we always knew it was going to be a slog, a fight there on the Senate side to figure out when the dust settles, how this thing's really going to work.
I think what is fascinating now is we don't know how big the Republican majority will be. We do know that it will be pretty small, right? Maybe the 220s range, it looks like. What are you hearing about what that means for the likely next speaker, Kevin McCarthy?
I don't hear, and you listen, you're all over the Hill. You may know better than I do, but I don't hear of any real substantive challenges being mounted to him as speaker. I think what's going to happen is if he becomes speaker as expected, he's going to have a lot of wrangling over there with the Freedom Caucus and other people who are, you know, or to the farther right of the party who are going to immediately start calling for impeachments and that kind of thing. Can he manage that so they have a unified voice on the things that they want to try to accomplish? Listen, you've got a president with a veto pen. There's only so much you can do, but you don't want to waste the 2 years acting like you're doing nothing for the American people. I think there'll be messaging bills just like Democrats do where they're like, look, we put this thing up, we passed this, and the president won't sign it when we all know he's not going to sign it. But you got to look like you're governing and doing the actual work or the people will punish you.
Republicans also now will have the power of the subpoena.
Mm-hmm. And I think that could be a real headache for the White House. You heard the president talk about this Wednesday after the midterms when somebody asks about the Hunter, because I think you're going to hear a lot about the border calls to impeach Secretary Mayorkas. You're going to hear a lot about Hunter Biden. You're
probably,
you know,
the FBI Director Ray.
The FBI.
Garland.
With subpoena power. Yeah. I mean, Jim Jordan is going to be busy because I think he has a lot of plans for a lot of hearings. You know, Senator Paul is talking about Dr. Fauci. If Republicans somehow, you know, get the upper hand in the Senate, I think you'll see a lot of Dr. Fauci, or at least calls for him, whether he, you know, goes into full retirement or doesn't show up. That's a whole nother fight over subpoenas or anything else. But I think they're very focused on these investigations. And you heard the president say, when asked about Hunter and investigation, say, well, I think the American people are ready for us to move on, get some things done for them. And he says it's almost like a comedy. Well, Jim Jordan et al. Do not think so. And they will be sending out some requests to appear.
Do you think that that is a mandate? I mean, is that where the country is too?
I think it's where Jim Jordan's constituency, if you're more broadly, not just his district in Ohio.
because that was one of the sort of cautionary tales from Democrats, mm-hmm. right? Is, you know, let's not go too far here with some of these Trump hearings and in the impeachment, right? I mean, mm-hmm. and so there is sort of a thought of like, do Republicans sort of come out and say, you know, what was good for the goose is good for the gander, and you know, start moving in that direction, or is there sort of a
Yeah, I think they've been itching. They've been itching to get that gavel and get those subpoenas. And listen, there are people, they have gone on all forms of radio and TV and ads and everything else to say, if you give us the power, we're going to do these investigations. There will be a big push from within the party that if they don't get some of this stuff done, there are going to be some people who want their money back.
Well, and the other issue, too, is, I mean, we have to do this again in 2 years. You have.
It's never over.
Well, it's not. I mean, but my point is, you have, keeps me gainfully employed. But you you have a lot of these Republicans who flip seats, right, in sort of swingy, flippable seats. And the decisions they're going to have to make are going to be based on, I got to run in this same district, in this same flippable seat in 2 years. Right.
Right. And those are hard to hold on to.
Yeah. So I guess it's just you wonder, like, what is going to get done legislatively, right? They have to.
I don't think a whole lot.
Well, I mean, what do they do with Ukraine aid?
I mean, they're going to have to find a way forward on that. I mean, they're going to name mailboxes, post offices. They're going to try to get stuff done, hopefully, for vets. They're going to do funding measures enough to keep things open. As you know, as our listeners know, the money runs out December 16th under the current federal spending mechanism. So in a lame duck session, they're going to have to figure that out. There will be things they have to get done for the country to keep operating. But there are threats already about the debt ceiling. Yeah. And listen, the House controls the pocketbook. So that's the one place Republicans are likely to have some power.
But you don't see much of a ground here for comprehensive immigration reform.
No. I mean, I hate to say it. I hate to say it. But then who does that benefit if they get it done? Mm. It would benefit the country. It would benefit the country to figure out that situation. But going into a 2024 election, I think that Republicans probably are not going to want to give the White House a big win. And the White House is not going to want to give, you know, the legislative bodies or body controlled by the Republicans a win. But that's where you got to hope that people rise above and think, all right, this is a massive problem for decades in this country. The border is completely out of control, according to Democrats and Republicans and neutral observers down there. Mm-hmm. And the people who are caught up in the middle of it are human beings, and their lives are being lost there, too. So if you care about humanity, you might want to get on that.
Let me finish with this. And this is sort of a Supreme Court question, so I'm glad that you're here. How big an impact did the Supreme Court have in these midterms?
I think it was outsized, honestly. If you think about the Dobbs decision that got rid of Roe v. Wade, that clearly fired up the Democrats' base. We saw them surge over the summer on the congressional generic ballot and other places, and they banked a lot of that vote early. I mean, when weeks ago in a number of states things opened up, they were still hammering the airwaves with that message. And I think in states where the abortion question was on the ballot, it was very good for Democrats too, and drove their base to get out in those states. So I think the Supreme Court's decision in Dobbs, listen, it's what pro-lifers have been fighting for mm-hmm. roughly half a century. Mm-hmm. But it may have had some significant costs for pro-life causes if you look at that in light of conservative wins and losses in the midterms.
What do we have on Fox News Sunday this weekend?
You know what? We had a plan. And then Tuesday night sort of, like,
I know where this is going.
Blew up that plan. So, you know, I think you're going to hear from leadership on both sides of the aisle. We're trying to nail down who comes to join us. But we're going to, you know, we've got a fantastic panel, like always, to do a very deep dive on exactly what happened and polls and those kinds of things. But you're going to hear from our reporters, too. We're trying to add more of kind of a reporters roundtable. And what they were seeing and hearing on the campaign trail, did it match up with the polls or not? And we'll talk 2024 because it's that time.
It's going to start right away. I will be watching Shannon Bream, the anchor of Fox News Sunday. I love our chats. Thanks for joining us.
I do, too. Thank you, Jared.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
This is Andy Puzder with your Fox News commentary. Coming up.
Most psychedelic drugs are illegal under federal law. A lot of people still use them recreationally and increasingly therapeutically for treatment of mental health problems like depression and post-traumatic stress disorder. The Department of Veterans Affairs has clinical trials going with the support of amendments sponsored by New York House Democrat Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Texas House Republican Dan Crenshaw, a veteran wounded in Afghanistan.
Research was first conducted at the VA in the 60s when scientists considered psychedelics a potential game changer in treating psychiatric conditions. But as recreational use increased, the studies were abandoned until recently when the VA re-implemented the program last summer after FDA and DEA approval.
Marcus Capone was a Navy SEAL dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder and a traumatic brain injury.
We call it a mild TBI because it's really, you know, MTBI. And at the time, I think all of us were avoiding the term PTSD. You know, I still avoid the term today.
He and his wife, Amber, promote and sponsor psychedelic therapy for veterans after his positive experience.
I don't like to be labeled with the post-traumatic stress label, but I was definitely struggling with all the symptoms that fall underneath those categories. So I was starting to become really agitated, angry, depressed. I wasn't sleeping well. You know, we had lost a lot of individuals from 2006 to 2010, some very close friends. And, you know, it was just, I was just getting tired. I started seeing some therapists during that time. And I was actually put on my first antidepressant in 2010. And I stayed on prescription medicines, a host of them, through 2017. You know, once you start on that path, it's difficult to stop.
So you were taking an active role in your treatment, Amber. I'm sure you were there too. And Amber, you probably thought once he was done, okay, look, he's out, fresh start, new life, he'll feel better now.
I definitely thought that. I definitely thought that. And we actually attended a retirement ceremony for a SEAL that Marcus served with recently. And I, you know, just sitting there and seeing this family, this precious family that has given so much and how excited they were to finally get their dad back, their husband back, and knowing the struggle that we went through on the other side of service, you know, it really is a time in someone's life where you should be so excited and so optimistic about the future. And I was that, but there were no resources on the other side. So it was enormously challenging.
Let me fast forward from this dark tunnel to 5 years ago, Veterans Day 2017, and you said everything changed. Was it just like a switch?
Yeah, you know, I came to a point where I was just frustrated. Five different brain centers, a multitude of prescription meds. And this was, we seemed to think it was a last ditch effort. I tried hyperbaric oxygen therapy. I've tried TMS. And, you know, nothing seemed to work for me. And the more I read about psychedelic medicine, the more it made sense that these are medicines that are used for recreation, just like anything else can be used. But these are medicines first. And so the more research I did, the more it made sense. And so I just, you know, I took a chance and I went to a reputable clinic in Mexico. And I hate to use the word panacea, but I mean, the turnaround was so fast and it changed my perspective. It really felt like I had lifted all this weight that I was carrying on my shoulders. You know, I was kind of excited to just live again. And the first thing I did was to tell Amber, I said, this is exactly what our, you know, my teammates need. I know a lot of them were suffering. A lot of them were reaching out and trying to figure out where they can get help. And so we just wanted to pay it forward. That's really all we wanted to do. And we had no idea it was going to turn into where we're at today.
Tell me what the drug was called, Ibogaine. Do we call it a drug?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you classify it, a medicine, a drug. You know, it is extracted from the iboga root, which grows in West Africa. And you know, it's been used in certain African cultures for thousands of years for rites of passage, for, you know, stomach ailments, for mental health. And it's also being studied for addiction. So opioid addiction, alcohol use disorder. And what the drug does, like many of the other classic psychedelics, you know, it puts you into an awakened dream state and it flashes really your life before you. The joke is you can't hide from the medicine. It's going to pull out what it needs to. And the things that are affecting you in your subconscious, maybe that you're not even thinking about, the things that are affecting you in your daily life, the drug actually makes you go back and potentially revisit those. So you revisit potentially childhood traumas, or you visit, you know, wartime traumas, and you deal with those. As you know, you can't overcome problems unless you deal with them head on. And that's what the drug does. And when you deal with that, you're able to move on. You're able to kind of bury the hatchet.
Is it sort of like does it feel like a hard reset, or is there some sort of maintenance therapy?
No, it's a complete reset. It disrupts your default mode in certain ways. So your default mode, you and I, you know, we're protected. It protects us. You know, the oven's hot. Don't touch the oven. You touch it one time, you're not going to do it again. Or you have these rumination thoughts. You know, I'm no good. I can't do anything right. I walk in a room with a lot of people. Everyone's staring at me, right? These are the thoughts that keep going on in our minds. We've all had them. Some of them, of course, for people are really bad and they need to take medicine for that. Well, the psychedelic medicine cuts that thought pattern, and it allows you to move away from that thought pattern and generate new thought patterns that can be positive. And that's the power of some of these medicines.
I'd also say that Marcus has put in a ton of hard work on the other side of it. So it's certainly it felt like a miracle cure at the time, because nothing had worked. And this was so rapid and so intense. It certainly seemed like a panacea, but some of Marcus's hardest days came after the journey, because he was still processing. And so by continuing to go back to the well and really deal with the things that were affecting him subconsciously, 5 years later, he still continues to improve. And by the way, there's no finish line on this journey, on this trip. It's a continual improvement for the rest of his life. But psychedelics got him from a really dark, sort of self-destructive place back on his feet, and he's taken it from there.
What's the pushback from either one of you? Is it concern, the pushback in terms of why this stuff is illegal in the United States? Is it concerns about safety, ignorance, concerns about efficacy, or is it just, you know, the stigma of we don't want you getting high?
I would say it's probably both. I would say it's probably rooted in lack of education. These substances were grouped alongside heroin, crack cocaine, methamphetamine. I think that once we can destigmatize psychedelics and humanize the messaging, science will prove that they are far more efficacious than anything currently available. And I think that the other pushback would be, these treatments are like once in a lifetime to once a year. You know, they're very infrequent. And when you have lifetime subscribers to the pharmaceutical model, that's a threat in a very different way.
Yeah. Do you think that there's, to be cynical about it, is there behind the scenes or not behind the scenes pushback from pharma against this stuff? It's against their financial interests, certainly.
You know, at the heart of it, I want to think that people are good people, Chris. I think what pharma is going to do is going to say, okay, here's a new drug that works. We're going to figure out a way to get involved. Right. I don't think they're going to say, well, you know, we're going to continue pushing Prozac and other antidepressants and mood stabilizers down people's throats, because that's the way we can make money. I think if there's something that comes to market that works, I think they're just going to figure out a way to get involved. Right. So I don't think there's nefarious activity, but that's my own.
The hope, at least.
Yeah. I mean, it might actually be, it could be a good thing. If Acme Drug Company comes up with a way to, you know, safely and cheaply produce this stuff, then, you know, maybe so much the better. In the meantime, you guys, I've started this organization called VETS, Veterans Exploring Treatment Solutions. Tell me what you're doing to get people access to this stuff.
As Marcus mentioned earlier, one of the first things he said to me after I saw him following his Ibogaine journey was, this is exactly what my teammates need. And we didn't really know what that would look like, but we started raising money for our friends. Of course, we were doing this without a real clear indication of, you know, what the efficacy rates would be or if the results would last. And so for about a year, we had this grassroots movement where we really didn't want to talk about it. Our community was struggling, but it was also at that point very stigmatized to say we're struggling. And at about the 11 and a half month mark of this, we wanted 1 year to go by before we would be courageous enough to speak out or take next steps. One of Marcus's former teammates and one of my best friend's husbands took his life. And from that point forward, we just decided, this is it. We've got to speak out. We've got to figure this out. And so We put together a dedicated organization, which is now Vets. We obtained our 501c3 status, and we provide funding for other veterans who unfortunately are having to leave our country to travel abroad for access to meaningful care. And we are really starting to pick up our advocacy efforts primarily on Capitol Hill to really enact long-term change. We're very limited as an organization how many individuals we can help any given year, 150 to 250. There are hundreds of thousands of veterans that could benefit from this. So we're really compelled to move the needle on the legislative front.
Okay. Well, at the risk of getting you maybe a little more attention than you can handle at the time, go to vetsolutions.org if you want to help out the Capones in the organization, or if you need some help, or if you know somebody who needs some help. Marcus and Amber Capone, thank you very much. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks so much.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Andy Puzder.
What's on your mind?
Polls are closed across the country, and it seems clear the Republicans will take control of at least the House of Representatives, and they have a shot at control of the Senate. While there was no red tsunami, Republicans made gains, and thankfully, we will likely have a divided government for the remainder of the Biden presidency. So what does that mean for working and middle-class Americans? What can Republicans do to turn the economy around with only one, perhaps two, houses of Congress? As it turns out, they can do quite a lot. Let's look at what might play out economically under each of the likely post-election scenarios. First, with a majority in at least the House of Representatives, Republicans can put an end to the Democrats passing the massive spending spree legislation that's been driving inflation and crushing American families, such as the bloated American Rescue Plan and the ironically named Inflation Reduction Act. Should Republicans win both the House and the Senate, they could use the reconciliation process, which avoids the filibuster and allows the Senate to pass fiscal legislation on just a majority vote, to pass pro-growth legislation. Biden would then be forced to either veto the legislation, as Clinton did with the Republican-passed tax cuts in 1995, or sign it into law, as Clinton did with welfare reform. If that is ultimately the case, I would expect Republicans to focus on energy and crime. Energy is both a jobs and an anti-inflation issue with substantial national security overtones. Given Tuesday night's election results and the genuine crises facing our nation, there are likely Senate Democrats who would support measures in both areas. Maybe not enough to defeat a filibuster, but enough to make those issues genuinely bipartisan. That's the kind of bipartisanship Americans have been hoping for. This is an opportunity for both political parties to deliver. Even with control of just the House, Republicans can also start turning the tide on excessive government spending and inflation. Inflation and the economy consistently polled as the number one issue on the minds of voters and were a deciding factor in a number of otherwise close races. Two ways House Republicans can address excessive spending are government funding. By tradition, general appropriations bills originate in the House, and appropriations is where most policy fights will happen over the next 2 years. It's also where Republicans will have maximum leverage. Biden's government needs taxpayer money in order to do anything. Republicans should rein in spending levels and also cut off harmful spending that funds the left's agenda. Cutting back on funding for some of Biden's spending and tax giveaways to green energy programs would be a great place to start. The Treasury will hit the $31.2 trillion debt limit next year. This is an absurd amount of debt, particularly with interest rates rising. Increasing the debt limit has historically served as a leverage point for doing something about spending going back 40 years. Any agreement on a debt limit should be paired with spending cuts and reforms that address our nation's underlying problem, unsustainable spending. All of this points to a better, stronger economy with Republicans in control of one or both houses of Congress. Elections matter because policy matters. And as the last 21 months demonstrate, it matters a lot. I'm Andy Puzder, former CEO of CKE Restaurants.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. New from the Fox News Podcasts Network.
My name is Kennedy, and welcome to my podcast, which will, I humbly say, single-handedly save the world. You're welcome.
It's Kennedy Saves the World. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.